Welcome to Before You Cut Bangs. I'm Laura Quick.
And I'm Claire Fearman.
So I have some crazy people in my life, like my brother and Laura, who watch Love is Blind. And so Reed has been trying to convince me to try it because we're very similar. I don't know why he watches it, but he watches it for the irony, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, it's hilarious. That's
yes,
why.
He thinks it's funny. And so I was like, all right, I'll try to watch it. And I did. I finished the one season of it.
A full season?
Yeah, because
did
I brought a couple
of last season?
I brought Danielle into it. I brought our friend Nick into it. And so we're like, and everybody's mad at me and Reed for us
having to advocating for it.
Yeah. Well, really, and I was just like trudging through it. I mean, just trying like, I said we're going to watch this. But here's the thing we talked about all the time is all of the people's titles, it would say like their name and their,
oh my God, Shane did the same thing.
Yeah, it's all like manager. It's like, that doesn't mean manager of what? Like, that doesn't mean anything. They all had just these like very generic titles. So you don't know what any of those people do for a living.
Literally. Probably not a lot. So one time I sent a group text to Laura and Will without any opinion or judgment from me and just ask them what they thought about porn because I was curious. And it's not something that a lot of us talk about regularly. I think there's a lot of like fear or taboo or shame or excitement or whatever. And I'm certainly not asking to record this episode so we can all sit around and talk about porn. But part of why Laura and I wanted to do this was to talk about things that could be hard or could be uncomfortable. And I hope you're still listening. So that's what this episode is. And there's no outline or framework. We just get to see what happens.
Should we say right at the beginning that we're all very aware, whether you like porn or dislike it, talking about the three of us, that we're all, the three of us are very aware that there is some really dangerous stuff with like trafficking and stuff. There are girls that obviously are in it that do not really want to be in it, and it can be a very sad thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I just find sometimes if I'm talking to someone and we're
the subject comes up because you talk about porn a lot. Go on, Will.
Yeah. No. But but it seems like that has like one time even when I just admitted to like seeing some porn, somebody's like, "Geez, you didn't care about like the girls
well-being
are,
of them."
It's like, well, now wait a second. So I just feel like I need to say that up front. Everywhere.
I think also up front, we have had this on our list of topics since January.
Or maybe before even.
Yeah, I don't even remember. We wrote it down in January. Yeah. I could have texted y'all. Oh my gosh, I was flying home from Utah, I think. So it would have been before.
Yeah, it was.
And so there is a lot of sensitivity around it, and you know we will make fun of something and have a lot of lightness around it. And so I think that's our disclaimer. We couldn't possibly review every nuance, fact, belief. I think this is more of a conversation of normalization, right?
And I think just saying like we understand there's a wide spectrum of people that listen to this podcast, and some may be pro and some may be totally against it. And I think you'll find that even at this table where we're recording this, that we probably are not all on the same page about it. And that's why we're talking about it, because one, like Claire said, we started Before You Cut Bangs to talk about hard things and bring them into the light. And not that porn has to be hard for everybody. Maybe it isn't. Pun not
Gosh,
intended.
So many puns.
Intended. I don't know. All right. Okay. So kick us off. Okay. Tell them about this text.
Okay. I sent this text. I was on a date with Bobby and we had just like started asking harder questions. We've been dating over a year. What are you?
Pun. Just the puns. They just keep coming. Just. Oh, and there it is again.
Hey, yep.
Sorry. Good.
In case you were wondering, guys, Will's here.
I should just do a little
with all the jokes.
A little ding on the I'll go back ding. And put a little ding
you
every
should.
Time there's a pun.
You should.
Okay. So start asking questions. Then I wanted to know what they thought because I thought, what a great episode for a podcast. And then we've really just pushed it off. I'm going to give a little backstory. Growing up in my Southern household, we did not even name body parts. Okay. Like what?
Mm-mm.
Like there was no actual biological anatomically correct name in our household, okay?
Yeah.
There was Poonsy, TT, whatever. Mm-hmm. One of my best friends, what?
Hambone.
Heavens no.
What?
I think that's what they called my little brother's penises.
Oh, what? Oh.
Maybe it was Hammerhead.
Okay. Y'all.
Oh, did the doctor do No? Was there no doctors involved?
No, that there was. If you recall, there's only one doctor in my household or in my family, and she has a PhD in math. Go on.
Well, we're that vet when y'all remove the
That's
island,
what I thought you were talking about was
the vet. They're not vets. We know this.
So I grew up in a household that was like very avoidant of anything like uncomfortable with like sex or whatever. When I was told finally that birth control, like I was dating a boy in high school and my mom was like, are you having sex? And I can't remember if I was or I wasn't. I for sure lied. And I was like, please stop talking about it. And she was like, you can go get on birth control at Planned Parenthood or you can go to a gynecologist. And I'm like, oh my God. I was like dying. And then she said, this is not your one-way ticket on the sex train. And I was like, yes, ma'am. And that was the whole talk. This is not your one-way ticket on the sex train. And then we had a chalkboard in the kitchen and someone drew a train with me as the conductor on it. And that was like as extensive as the like don't have sex.
Okay, wait, pause. Will, did you have the sex talk? Did your parents have a sex talk with you?
No, yes.
I don't mean birds and the bees.
I was pushing for it. So I'm.
You wanted it?
All right, so I'm ADD, right? Really bad. And so like in my life, I'm trying to think. So like, it's why I ride motorcycles. It's why I jump out of airplanes. It's like all that.
It's why you have that unicycle.
No, that's like a different thing.
That's the
unicycle is not exciting to me at all.
Yeah, but you did it just to say you did it and
to
you
learn,
could do
to
it.
To prove that I could learn it.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. The skydiving thing is like, skydiving makes me feel normal, right? When I get that, then it's like, okay, this feels good and normal.
I'm going to be honest, this feels like a different episode and not about ADD, but go on.
It's very much ADD. Yeah.
Is it?
Oh, sure.
That like adrenaline situation is an ADD thing?
Those are most pilots and stuff have ADD. Yeah.
A lot of people with ADHD aren't.
Oh, you were a pilot. I forgot about that.
Don't get a dopamine hit from day-to-day activities. That's why I can do laundry, but I can't put it away. Because it doesn't hit our reward pathways.
Yes. I have to go the extra step for my reward pathways to be triggered.
Okay. Okay.
Not everybody has to do it.
Okay,
because
I was gonna. There's
that.
A bunch of different.
It could be like you could buy something new, something like fresh, or like
a lot of impulse stuff around ADHD.
Very
and
impulsive,
ADHD.
And then I recently found out that when an ADHD person accomplishes a task, we feel relief. Where someone without it feels proud of themselves, like, "Oh, I accomplished this. Look at me!" And we're all like, thank fucking God that shit's over. So we just have like very different responses. Are all three of us ADHD?
I'm ADHD. Are you ADD?
Yeah, I always thought I was just ADD. Now I don't think there's a difference.
There's
right?
not there really that, a right? difference. And your hyperactivity usually in girls was masked or you were a daydreamer instead. So like...
And yeah, because I didn't have like hyperactivity in class or anything like that. Same. Whereas there were the kids that were all over like... the place and they were like, oh, they have ADHD. So I was under the impression they were different, but now as an adult, I think I've learned they're the same thing. Yeah.
I was just like doodling those S's where all the lines connect, you know, that was more my in-class thing.
Oh, I didn't know.
That was teacher's favorite.
Daydream issues.
So,
daydream.
So anyway, so like as a
your
kid,
parents.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember, not say a kid, I mean, it was middle school or whatever, but I remember like, what is this about and how does this work and whatever. My mom be like, please, let's not talk about it. And her answer usually is, I don't know.
Did she say talk to your dad?
No, I just... No, and I don't think I would have talked to him really about it much. I think
so.
It was
your sex talk was you just peppering your mom with questions and her being uncomfortable.
Yeah, pretty much.
Steph says she gave me some book and we went on a walk and she told me, and I guess I was so ashamed that I don't remember.
Aww.
But she says that, and she's not a liar. She's a lot of things, but she doesn't lie. One of my children is ADHD, and this is so helpful. She asked me starting in first grade how babies were made, like very serious. Mm-hmm. And I gave some bullshit answer. And she was like, I know that's not right. And then when she got older, I got all these books. I found the New York Times list for like kids, how to tell them. And I, being ADHD, not really a proofreader, you know, I just am going to sit down and do the task. Okay. So we sit down and the first book we read is very metaphorical. It's like the sperm and the egg do a fun dance. And it's like, gives no information. And we finish it. And I'm like, and that's that. And she was like, that didn't tell me anything. So then I get the next book and y'all, it was so recommended. and I guess it gave her the information, but it was so, it had cartoons of what was going on. And so I read it, close it, and look over, and she's crying, and she's like, no, no. And I was like, yes. And then we had to emotionally process that. So it's just a really tough conversation. But I wanted my kids to have the words and feel comfortable in their bodies in a way that I was not.
And I'll say, for me, obviously, no one spoke to me about anything. And I think, like, I remember starting my period and going to the office and saying, like, hi, you need to call 911 because I'm hemorrhaging. I'm dying, because I was young when I started. And they called my dad. And my dad, even then, when he picked me up, I'll never forget, we got in the car. He said nothing to me. He just patted me on the back and was like, taking you to grandma's house. Like, that was it. Got to my grandma's house. She gave me like a diaper size pad. Sure. And was like, yep, this is the beginning. And no conversation around it. And so definitely no one told me about sex. No one talked to me about birth control. It's just always like a, you can't do that. A ton of shame, lots and lots of shame. And so I do remember seeing like a magazine in my brother's room, like that being kind of like first exposure, and maybe like coming around the corner and seeing like late night HBO, some sexy stuff. Yeah. Late night.
The fuzzier the screen, the better.
Exactly. And those are kind of when I think back to like first sex exposure, no one was talking to me about it. I was just consuming or hearing things at school. And so I definitely don't think that I had like a baseline for even, I didn't feel comfortable to ask anybody anything. And so you really are just kind of like on an island as a kid, learning this stuff from your friends or learning this stuff from whatever you're consuming. If it's a magazine, if it's TV, if it's, you know, now it's so accessible. I have a story about my own children and how, you know, like just not even knowing that a sixth grader would be Googling porn.
Mm-hmm.
So not having parental controls on phones, because I just didn't. I was like, he's so sweet and like
little,
would never. I was like, oh, God.
So before we get into like the fun stuff or our differing opinions, you brought up something important, which is our baseline for sex with a partner. Masturbation and porn will be heavily influenced by how secure our home was and then like later experiences. And so I'll just kick us off. If I'm saying like poonsy and, you know, God, awful, ridiculous things, I was like highly uncomfortable. And while I have like no judgment, this is my first belief, I don't have any judgment around porn. It doesn't bother me. It does not bother me if a partner watches porn at all. I don't feel like envious necessarily or whatever. I like, it is really hard for me because of the discomfort, and I've had to work really hard to get past a lot of intimacy discomfort. And I will throw in a funny story. So I had never, please God, Mom, turn it off now if you haven't already.
Turn it off, Steph. Step away. And Dad, you better not be listening.
I don't think my dad listens. He's okay, like, my Keith, kid has you're a podcast. You're out of here. She's so cool. So he probably doesn't know how to listen, so we're good. So I was at college, and my friend wanted to go to a store, which I'm sure we've all seen, Callie's Love Stuff on 31.
Oh, yeah.
She wanted to go there, and it was like a 45-minute drive from our college campus, and she wanted to get a vibrator. I really wasn't 100% sure like what it looked like or like what one would even do with it. And people don't believe me when they say, even in college, I had never masturbated. Like, why would I lie about that? Like, it had never crossed my mind. Later, women become far more sexual past college. Like,
I was way after college years before I even understood.
Men and women really flip-flop when you're like, yeah, in your sexual prime. So we go to Callie's, and we're like, I am horrified being in there. Like, I remember being like really hot and really nervous, and I was like, just pick one for me, I don't give a shit. And then someone taps me on shoulder.
No,
and not- it's a girl that is in every one of my psychology classes, and she's an employee, okay? And I didn't know what to do, because she's like, hey, can I help you with anything? Like, fuck no. First of all, I hugged her, just gave her a little hug. Like, we weren't friends. I just saw her in psychology classes. So I just gave her a good hug and was like, I'm great. And then I moved on with my shopping. Then, so my roommate at the time gets these vibrators, or maybe I picked it. I blacked out. It was a little, I don't even think I got the pun. It was a little purple beaver.
Is it the shape of the animal?
Okay.
And you just now got it?
Later, but at the time I was like, cute, you know, little woodland creature, you know? Kind of took the harshness out of it for me. Okay. So we go up there, and I don't know if they still do this, but they would test the batteries, and if they don't work, they'd get
like,
you on.
Could you draw this process out any longer?
It was like the scene in Love Actually when Alan Rickman's character is, he's buying a necklace for his mistress, and Mr. Bean, I don't know his character in the movie, is taken for fucking ever to wrap it, and he's like, be quite quick about it, you know, so it's weird, but anyways, and he's like, just... ready in a flash. That's what I felt like. I'm like, put that shit in a bag let me give you my cash so this isn't on my debit card that my dad can see. Okay. So my battery doesn't work. So they're like,
stop. Your battery didn't work.
The battery didn't work. So they're like, if we can get another purple beaver. And I'm like, stop, please. Stop saying the purple beaver. So, anyways, I got it.
I love that you're wearing a purple sweatshirt also right now.
And pants. I still love the color purple, any shade. So I went with a lot of comfort, right? Woodland creature, a color I really liked, had no clue what to do with
batteries it. Batteries weren't working.
So, anyways, that was really my intro into the world of
sexuality.
It wasn't a great intro. It wasn't traumatic. It was just uncomfortable.
I mean, I feel like I don't know anybody. Like, I could not name a friend right now that I could call to tell a story about a great sex talk that really grounded them and prepared them for life. Like, I don't have one friend that grew up in a household like that.
Yeah, I think that's a very unusual thing, because if it's too open and honest, the conversation,
it gets weird.
Then it's weird and the kid doesn't want it and whatever. Yeah, I think as long as the child feels healthy enough, like the relationship's healthy enough for them to be able to ask questions if they want. I think that's probably the most important thing.
I agree. And then there's something to be said for, like, you know, so-and-so's older brother, like, told us all, like, sat us all down. He was like, this is what a blowjob is. And I was like, noted. Like, you know, kids are going to be kids. It wasn't weird. It wasn't dangerous. He was just like, let me clue y'all in on a couple things.
And but I do like, think perfect. Your real done. Sex education came from friends,
yes,
like
that's
in
what I'm
friendship
saying.
And like your friend knowing a little bit more than you, or like older cousins.
Yeah.
I definitely got most of my education from like an older cousin who would be like, I made out with that. I'm like, well, what do you mean when you say you made out? That means we were kissing with tongue and he ran his shirt. Like, just like all these like graphic things that only someone who's like close to you, right, is going to tell you. But nobody in my family was going
to
say that.
And to be clear, you did not live in Alabama when you were getting your sex education from your cousins.
Okay, first of all, I just okay. Wow, he's really going for it. I meant like my female cousin who lived next door to me, who is 5 years older than me and just was going through life.
Sharing
we were not
story.
Doing this together,
if you're
guys.
In the car, raise your hand if you also caught the joke of when she said, I got learned most of my sex education from my cousins. You said that.
All right. God, take that out. Shit.
It's in, baby.
Damn it. All right, let's move on.
Well,
let's talk about porn.
I'll tell my story real quick. Yeah, so first... Okay, so first thing for me was, a Playboy. A neighbor had a Playboy. And so, like, open up, look, and I was like, oh my God, that's what it, what? What's happening there? What's that hair about? Oh no, nah. So that was, like, the first thing. But then it sparked my interest, like, oh, what? And then, later, like, somebody, like, older kid had a porn or whatever and, like, watched. I was
like
that's
VHS?
What?
Yeah, you know it was on VHS.
Like, that's what happens? That's, okay, all right. Yeah, so that was
that's
the intro to that.
Happens.
Mm-hmm. Didn't know. Like
most of us don't.
Yeah.
All right. Back to your porn.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, Mike, y'all both told y'all's intro to like.
What do you mean back to the porn?
Now we go
to that conversation. You text us. We're circling back around.
Well, I'd like to hear your opinions recorded.
So
back to it. Y'all have our basic understanding of how we learned about this stuff. I think it's valuable to hear our beliefs so listeners can either take something from it, think we're the worst, or whatever. Be more comfortable talking and listening.
Yeah, I think that's what we always hope these episodes, any episode, we hope that it maybe sparks a cool conversation with you and your friend group or your spouse or whoever.
Stop avoiding the question.
I am avoiding the question. All right. Okay. So...
If y'all give too many disclaimers, it's going to be garbage.
I'm not giving. No,
I'm the only disclaimer. All right, here we go. Listen, my I believe that the way that I believe about this comes from my own lived experience and what I've been through. So I'm going to err on the side of I don't believe that porn is healthy. I think it's an unhealthy. I am not in judgment of people who consume porn. I believe that the industry has a lot of corrupt pockets that utilize women and men from a trafficking standpoint, and I have some moral dilemmas about that. But because of what happened to me in my life, and I want to be careful here, this is something I have talked about, never in depth, but because I have sexual trauma, and because I was, my earliest memory of sex was something I didn't choose. Because I was sexually traumatized in that way, I probably have a higher trigger button for this sort of stuff. So where I stand on it is I am not in judgment of people who are consuming porn, and hopefully porn that is made morally in the way that everyone is choosing to be there and participating on their own, you know, in their own will and being compensated appropriately. However, I just think for me personally, there's a lot of triggers attached to it. I'm not saying I've never not watched it. I have consumed porn, but it really sent me down a bad spiral. And so it is not for me. I would say that it's probably not for most people who maybe have an experience like I have or have had. So that's where I am on it. I don't like it.
If it would be helpful, will you talk about like what spiral means?
Yeah. So spiral for me means that before I had good therapy, if I were consuming porn or even if I was watching TV and saw something, an experience that could be related or relatable to the experience, the sexual trauma that I had, I had a ton of PTSD. And so seeing those things could trigger me into what I would call like a PTSD spiral. And so, again, I know this is my own lived experience. I don't want to sound like a judgy girl who's like, yeah, shouldn't be watching porn. It's just not healthy for me.
I think that's what this gets to be about, is not necessarily good, bad, yes and no. It's that each of us have a different lived experience and yours didn't work well with porn.
Yeah. And I did try it. I mean, you know, I had partners who were like really into it. And I honestly, before I had therapy, I didn't even know that's what was happening to me, but I was shutting down completely. And I think it made me, I don't think I could be vulnerable or intimate because I was so like, is this, it was almost like I'd go into like autopilot,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
What about you?
Well,
yeah, you go next, Claire.
Feels like I'm about it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
You're up next.
I mean, there's a lot of layers to this for me. And I think also I want to mention that when you said like you could like totally disconnect and it was autopilot, mm-hmm. that's really important for a lot of people to understand that when we disconnect from the actual experience, that's a really good indicator that something's going on that doesn't feel right to you. So if you've experienced that and you listen, that's just information, right? And that gave you the information like, this doesn't feel right. What do I need to go do about it? Mm-hmm. So I have seen some porn. God, this is so awkward. I'm telling you too. I'm like, just fucking talk about it. I don't know why. I think it's because I'm like a very touchy-feely, talk about everything, connecting person. Porn has never felt very connecting to me. And I also start thinking too much about that person. I think I'd have too many intrusive thoughts. Like, I just would be like, is she okay? So it's just never been something that I've sought out. However, that is all visual. There's an app called Quinn. Do y'all know what Quinn is?
I do, because you told me about it.
No.
Quinn is for people like me. Quinn is an app that is $5 a month that is only audio porn.
Go on. Quinn, is this Q-U-I-N-N?
Yeah.
Okay.
So another girlfriend told me about this. So she was married, did not have a really great sex life. They're divorced. Doesn't matter. It's a very peripheral person. And she had told me about it. And so I downloaded it and I had a really similar experience if it felt really fake. Like, I'm just not a role play kind of girl. Like, it just makes me laugh. I get really uncomfortable. I'm like, you don't need to be like the dirty teacher. Like, not for me. But holy shit, I can't believe I'm doing this. But for someone like me that has this discomfort, probably from like Southern hood. And by the way, I wasn't raised in some like devout Christian home. I was raised in a very Jewish liberal home. So it's not like I was morally told this is bad or wrong. I didn't have a lot of exposure or comfort in my own skin to explore it. So Quinn gave me this way to like explore to my comfort level. Mm-hmm. And then I found things that I did like female voices were more comfortable to me than male voices. And while I don't have a sexual trauma, I do have trauma that does involve men. And so that was really impactful to me. Like, oh, women are more soothing to me. I can feel comfortable enough to experience this. And by that, I mean, use a vibrator that's not a beaver.
I was going to ask, is this, are we still with the purple beaver situation?
I've really upgraded the situation. So Sex and the City really normalized that too for me. Like later in college when I had the full DVD set, yes. I'm like, hell yeah, girls.
They're doing it.
Yeah. Hey. With that rabbit. I don't have that either. But so yeah, Quinn was like this great intro for me. Now I've worked in my professional life with a lot of addiction. So porn addiction is absolutely a real thing. And by the way, that would be like its own whole episode that I think would not be that interesting unless you have a loved one that struggles with it. So I'll just give like a little thumbnail of when I have seen porn addiction, it is in secret. It is lying. It comes from a deep place of pain and shame, and it's almost constant. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, well, my husband watches porn once a week, that is not porn addiction. If that bothers you and you feel uncomfortable, jealous, in pain, less than, that's a great conversation to have with your partner. That is not addiction.
It's also a great conversation to take to therapy. And I do think if, for instance, you've ever been in a relationship where you had a partner or spouse who got very, very, very jealous and you weren't addicted and you maybe were that person who was watching it once a week or once every 2 weeks or whatever, and it wasn't addiction, then you have a ton of shame. And so it becomes harder to talk about it in the future. And I think, like, again, just because it's not for me doesn't mean that it's my job to control what other people do. And so I think that's important for you to know that just because you feel shame around it does not mean that you're addicted.
That's right. 100%. And so if you have a partner that watches porn, he or she has a really healthy relationship with porn, and it doesn't feel good to you, that's just a great conversation, because that person's porn is not correlated to your sex life necessarily, like at all. There's also part of me, I think it's so cool. I think it's so cool. I think it's really like vulnerable, intimate when like couples are like, yeah, we watch porn together. I'm like, that just takes a really amazing amount of vulnerability that I just like wasn't given that. And it like works for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So my lens is super curious, super open-minded, definitely from this place of like whatever works for you. And I'm saying that at surface level because of our first caveat of like, if I take industry and put it on a shelf, I'm talking about in your relationship, what works for me, what works for you, and what works for people that listen.
Mm-hmm. You did so good. That was super vulnerable and awesome.
And Quinn, I think people are going to learn about that.
I learned about it.
All right. Yeah. So first of all, it makes sense about the women's voice and stuff, because according to this, I'm looking at overwhelmingly, first of all, 3 out of every 10 people that visit this porn hub, which is the popular one.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Yeah, okay. So 3 out of every 10 are women, and they overwhelmingly watch girl-on-girl, even when they're not lesbian themselves or bi or whatever. Yeah,
I think it can be like less invasive for any or other things.
But it also, this is weird, and I only have a friend group that we do. I would say it's easier to talk about this with your friends the older you are, if you have close personal girlfriends. Like, it is a subject that, like, I think is easy. I had a friend tell me years ago that she would watch girl and girl porn because she felt like she wasn't being unfaithful, but somehow watching a guy in the video would make her feel like she was like unfaithful somehow. And I was like, wow, okay, well, you might want to talk about that in therapy. But I mean, because I'm like, if you're consuming and lusting in any direction, I don't really know where that line is. But I have a very open door policy on this too. Like I'm more of like, I just don't want you to feel shame around anything you're doing within a relationship with me. So like, I'm not saying you have to come report either, right? Like, hey, how many times this week? But I do think that, yeah. All right. Well, let's just
okay. Well, so also, Quinn, I have questions. What type of stories are these? Like sounds? Are they stories? Is it just depictions? Is it just audio from? Okay. I don't know.
Lord, no.
It's just audio from.
Well, she when she said it's just. Yeah,
I've learned that like I'm very specific. I think most people are very specific in what they like and what they don't like. Mm-hmm. And there are things that like I'll try for 20 seconds and be like, get out of here. Mm-hmm. So it might be like if it's visual porn and there's like a storyline, it could be just the audio describing that. Like your partner gets home and walks in and puts their stuff down. So like it can set the scene and then go into having sex or whatever.
I just think from a comp perspective, it is a lot like reading a romance novel.
Yes.
It's very like much like
that's
that.
What I was asking.
It's literally like an audiobook of just the sex scenes from a romance novel.
Which when we were sitting on the beach the other day, we had like a speaker and Nick was like, look at this on my Spotify, like one of the you can just play adult novel audio.
Hell yeah.
Like on Spotify.
Yeah.
And we're joking about like,
a lot to say about smut books, but I can save that. So I could call you in a week and be like, take this line out, but I'm going to say it now anyways. So if...
Yeah, I'm leaving it in.
Definitely leaving this in. Sounds good.
I feel like when guys masturbate, it's a little bit more obvious what to do. There's like one thing, okay? Girls, there's a lot of questions, or there were for me, like what works and what doesn't work. And so like I had like Googled, this was a long time ago, but like Googled all this stuff. What Quinn does is... it helped me feel so much more comfortable in my own skin. And there are like female voices that in this very non like dirty, it's like almost like a direction pamphlet for like, now do this. That was so soothing to me.
Cause like they're guiding you. It's almost like they're guiding you because they're telling you what they're doing, right?
If you didn't already think I was a hippie freak, it is like listening to a sex meditation and you have an orgasm at the end and move on. And guess who's not saying sorry? Me.
Not anymore.
When
Claire's by herself.
By alone.
She doesn't.
Okay.
All right, your turn. No more follow-up questions. Time for you to get in there.
Yeah.
Pun intended. I'm just kidding.
So I think a lot of this goes back to like what I was saying earlier about the reasons I skydive and the reasons I ride the motorcycle and stuff. It's just that extra like the thing that's going to give me that dopamine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it does. And I enjoy it. We use it in a relationship and yeah, I think I have a
healthy relationship.
Yeah. Healthy relationship with it.
What were your parents like?
Well, they're still around.
I mean, as a child.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I need a more direct question, but
she's saying you're such a healthy, balanced adult that you know that you had a healthy, balanced childhood typically when you see that in an adult.
So, yeah, we had a good relationship and they, you know, no family's perfect and ours wasn't. But I don't remember like any bad stuff or bad times. And definitely they were pretty open. I mean, like, and they also were very, they would let me do, you know, I mean, like. I started skydiving when I was 16.
Is that legal?
Not anymore, okay. But it was then. Like, I've never done a tandem skydive, which now you have to pretty much start that route.
You've never done a tandem? You just started by jumping out of a plane?
Well, I did what was called static line. This is going to go down. But yeah, where basically you're like tied to the, think military when they like one after the other, jump. Yeah. And there's like a cord that pulls it for them. So I had to do five of those and then started, free fall. So now you do what's called accelerated free fall, which is, we're nerding out on this, but that's when you start with a tandem. And I think in Alabama, you have to be 19 to do that.
You do, because Clay wanted to skydive and we had to wait until he turned 19.
Because you technically you can't sign your rights away until you're 19.
Yeah.
It's 18 in almost every state Alabama.
Yeah, because he was like, well, let's just go back to Georgia or Tennessee and I can skydive there. I was like, no,
true.
I was trying
to procrastinate. That just increased my heart rate so much. I obviously don't have that.
So I started touring the country when I was 18. Started touring around the country with a band. Like, And they were like, okay, check in. Like, I mean, they cared and we had a great conversation about it and whatever. They were just very supportive.
Well, and it was like they were sturdy and said, you go because we will stay right here. And so that was like a really good line of trust.
There you go. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
And I think that says, I mean, obviously secure attachment stuff too, right?
For sure.
We should have a whole attachment.
Have we not?
No.
We Gosh, should, well, though. What we'll describe is what we would call secure attachment. It's why your children are secure. It was modeled for you. And then you have these like awesome kids that are teenagers and don't act, or one is a teenager and doesn't act teenagery. And mm-hmm. It's amazing. Good for you.
Good for you.
Good for you, Will.
So we're not going to talk about like the different categories and all that. I'm just kidding.
What would I know about it? I'm like, I do interrogate Bobby. I'm like, what do you like? What have you seen? But it's like from this really curious standpoint because
but with he that has face a, that you just made, it's kind of
he has
like
a really healthy relationship. I'm like, did you do that this week? He's like, I mean, maybe once. And I'm like, what day? Like it's like so intriguing to me. It's like a kid that hasn't experienced all this. I'm like, and then what happened? And I think I make him really
uncomfortable. What does she do? What does she do that you like?
What does she look like? You know, are there two of them? You know?
Big butt or not big butt?
See, I always put like my partner in the situation, whatever the situation is, right?
So like when a lot I'm, of like, imagination. Go,
yeah,
okay,
so like
yeah.
when I'm watching something, whatever the
you
situation
can, like, blur
is.
Out.
Yeah, it's not even blurring out, but I'm definitely like using both sides of my brain. Like I'm watching that, but I'm also like putting my partner, imagining my partner. If
That's
that makes
good.
Sense.
I mean, I think obviously, I don't want to sound like some like, I'm on my high horse here, because that's not it at all. I think for some people, and I like to know a little more from you, Claire.
Okay.
Because when you see people who either their partner or they are dealing with porn addiction, when we start talking about addiction, it's a different thing, right? Mm-hmm. So classify addiction. What does that mean? They can't control the impulse
to consume. Listen, I'm not a therapist, and this is not counseling, but... What I would consider that to be is if, like, it gets in the way of the important things in your life. Like, you spend so much time or it's such a factor that you start missing work stuff. You start...
Or it interferes with your own intimacy with your partner.
Right. That would be a thing. Yeah.
And I would say that's more... I think where it probably begins.
Right. So I will just say for me and my marriage... It so much does the opposite. Like it is an aid.
Enhances.
It enhances in a great way. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So we'll start with that one. So there would be direct consequence. Okay. And you still couldn't control the impulse. Okay. So direct consequence doesn't necessarily mean your partner is upset. That is a consequence. And hopefully you two would work it out and find some way that this works for you. So this is saying like, I've been caught at work, school. I have declining physical health. It usually has a comorbidity, which means it's a dual diagnosis. So that means you aren't just simply porn addicted. You likely have depression, anxiety, or something else where it soothes that. If I have low self-esteem and porn soothes that like Neosporin, that is where it's becoming a medicator. So we start with medicator, right? And then we move into addiction. Addiction is chronic. It is compulsive. It is in a complete preoccupation, okay? So that means I am preoccupied until I can act on the obsession, which is the compulsion. The compulsion is the act, okay? So total loss of control, might have lost your job, might have lost your marriage. You have so much loss. So in any addiction, I continue to do the behavior despite my negative consequence.
Right.
And it's really heartbreaking. You know, oftentimes someone that is, well, most addicts, porn, gambling, alcohol, drugs, shopping, whatever it is, they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I hope if you've look at porn addiction as a moral deficit or anything that's like gross, usually that person is so tortured by that. They don't want to feel that way. They want to find joy like we do by watching Love is Blind or getting ice cream with their family. They want to enjoy those same things, but the pleasure pathway that we all have, where we'll skydiving, me and you might buy a Gucci bag, like whatever our pleasure pathway
Glad
is.
To hear you admit that you're also buying Gucci bags.
My new Gucci sunglasses are so cute. Anyways, you can hike and like designer things. Anyways, addiction, not a choice, not a moral deficit. It is usually caused from pain and is so out of control.
And so if you have someone in your life that you feel like is suffering from an addiction, or maybe you're living through that, because like I know a lot of people that have experienced stuff like that, I hope that you'll hear Claire say that piling on to that just brings a bunch of shame and almost can push someone further into that addiction.
That's right. Because they're already feeling detached. They're using porn to detach. Like what Will described is not detached, that's secure, right? And so usually it's like ramping up where it might have started off in, you know, 1989 with somebody else's Playboy. And then it ramps up to sometimes really violent, really intense, really bizarre. There can be injury involved. It's just, it's a dark, dark spot to be in. Have I told you all about when I went to Widespread Panic for the first time?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So I'm like figuring out that I have this like hippie side raised by an uber deadhead dad. And I really liked nice things. And I had to like learn that both were okay. And I didn't learn that until much later. I felt very black and white about it. Did y'all have senior wills at the end of your senior year of high school?
What does that mean?
Senior will is printed in the high school like newspaper or whatever, and it's like what you're leaving behind. It's a really cute idea, and
it might be so cute.
So you'd like write to your friends like, I'm leaving Nancy, and you'd have some inside joke. So some of it like wouldn't really make sense, but it was really fun and really cute. And this girl that had been my friend, she was so mean to me all throughout high school. She did her whole senior will, and then in lowercase letters wrote Claire F. Phases. And she had like gotten on to me because she was like, she couldn't tell who I was because I liked all these different things. And y'all, she was so mean to me. I see her around all the time. If you're listening, you owe me an apology. But if you're one of those people that has all these parts of you, it's all right. Gucci glasses and a good hike is fine.
Yeah. Oh, well, let's hope. For sure. Neuroplasticity.
Bitch.
Circle back.
I like how I was so nervous about doing this episode, and we didn't at all touch on the things I was like anxious about.
What are they?
Go on. Say more.
No, I thought we were going to like talk about porn, not like our feelings.
Have you met me? It's all I know how to talk.
I was going to say, I'm sorry. Y'all make fun of me. It's so funny. I have to tell y'all this. So I was with my staff last week. We did a Q1 meeting, like a wrap-up meeting. And Kat, who's on my team, if you're listening, Kat, love you. Thank you for listening. Loves you so much.
I'm assuming
that you have to love her. She's so brilliant. But anyways, she was like, I love it. And I didn't realize this, but Kat is like our biggest advocate on the team. So every time a new episode comes out, she'll be like, did you guys listen? She wants to like unpack it with them and talk about it. And so she was like, I love that they make fun of you and roast you all the time about making people talk about their feelings. That they're like, you're the only person we know that can do that and get away with it.
I don't know another way.
I understand. I'm
Will
fine with it.
Will teaches me the way.
No. But I did, for some reason, I was on the way home from Easter stuff with my grandmother the other day. I'm driving from Gadsden, and I thought about how you got Shane to have these like...
marriage meetings?
Yeah, marriage meetings. And I was like, God, so crazy. I don't know what made me. I was listening to some podcast, I'm sure, that made me think.
Listen, we've rebranded the marriage meeting to a weekly check-in to make it not sound as formal. And we rebranded it because we did our last stint of therapy. That was like something they encouraged. But anyways, it was just hilarious to me because I'm like, really what they're doing is they're talking. They love that y'all are roasting me and that's what they're listening.
Good.
Okay, you know what? Whatever it takes to get you guys to tune in. Okay, this was not that bad. I'm so curious.
It wasn't bad at all.
I wasn't.
It was nothing. Yeah.
And I think we kind of touched on all the places you could possibly be unless we would have had an actual addict.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding. Touch. Hey. In all the places.
In all the places. Another thing that we need you guys to know is that we have a workshop coming up. If you are in the Birmingham area or anywhere in North Alabama, as Claire likes to call Birmingham, we're going to be in Homewood May 16th. For a workshop, reframing, kind of a spring refresh. And we're going to be talking about boundaries and core values in that one. So super exciting. If you're somewhere and you can't make it to Birmingham, man, hit us up. We'd love to know where you are and we could maybe do one in your city.
I probably won't stop by that one.
Shit, more people are coming to
April. All right. follow along with us everywhere. Please subscribe to the podcast. Find us on Instagram. We're constantly doing polls. We want to know what you think. And I know that you probably know this, but reviewing us and giving us 5 stars matters more than anything. And we are so grateful to have you here.